Thank you very much, Stan. Our next speaker is William Crystal, who is on leave from the Kennedy School of Government and Harvard and is now serving as a senior official in the U.S. Department of Education. Mr. Crystal.
Thank you. Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. It's my third time appearing at the Philadelphia Society. Each time has been a strong intramural debate among members of the Society or among conservatives, and this time is no exception. I was happy to hear from Mr. Godfrey that he complained that neoconservatives have their hearts on the left but live off expense accounts from the right. I had forgotten about this, and immediately, I should tell Don Lipset, went out and had a very lavish lunch and several drinks and extended my hotel stay. Mr. Gottfried also seems upset that neoconservatives lack a vision of the golden age beyond that of the City College cafeteria circa 1937. It's not something I remember. But cafeterias are important. My vision, my formative political experience, I suppose, was arguing for the defeat of George McGovern in the Harvard and Radcliffe cafeterias of 1972, when, as you know, the Harvard student body was polled in the 72 election, and I believe was 91% for McGovern, 7% for Eldridge Cleaver, and 2% for Richard Nixon. And I hope Mr. Gottfried has this interesting debates and finds a golden age in the Washington Times cafeteria. I actually like the Washington Times. I read it every day, and I, in fact, dread to tell him this if he's going there, but the Washington Times actually reflects a variety of conservative views. It even has a wide spectrum of columnists and of journalists. In fact, my sister works for the Washington Times. We're everywhere. There are probably even a few Jewish Nietzscheans there, for all I know. Maybe John Lofton can tell Mr. Gottfried that. I do also want to say, though, that even some ex-Trotskyites, though, there's a generational problem there, since there haven't been too many. There's a sort of an age limit on ex-Trotskyites. I do actually want to say, though, I think it was Mr. Tonser who made a rather snide reference to ex-Trotskyites sitting at Hoover and publishing articles, sitting at the Hoover Institution and publishing articles and commentary. I take it that refers to Sidney Hook, or maybe others as well as Sidney Hook. I myself would not mind. He also said that when you circle the wagons, you should be careful about giving the women and children arms, as they'll misfire. I myself, when circled, wouldn't mind being with ex-Trotskyites like Sidney Hook, or, for that matter, Chambers, or Burnham, or Meyer, or Billy Schlamm, or several others. But if, that's, each person can make his own choice, and if Mr. Tonser thinks the more robust defenders of a free society are other people, that's his choice to make. Coming from Washington, it's nice to see how seriously ideas are taken, or be reminded how seriously ideas and articles and books and essays are taken out there, outside Washington. In Washington, of course, no one has time to read any such things. I would say about this morning's talk simply that I do think that an injustice has been done, not so much to neoconservatives. I mean, there are only about 8 neoconservatives anyway, and it's unclear what the movement means, but really an injustice was done to the old right in the cardboard figures that we got of the old right as opposed to the neoconservatives. All the depth and subtlety and complexity of both individual thinkers on the old right and, of course, the varieties of thinkers seem to me to be sloughed over. In fact, I mean, one of the most remarkable things about the American conservative movement from the 40s and 50s on has been the vigorous debates within it and among the members of it. That's a healthy sign. Those debates, of course, occurred in the 50s and 60s. They continue to occur today. In fact, I would argue that almost every single substantive policy or philosophical area, all the interesting debates are among conservatives. In economics, the interesting debates are between supply-siders, monetarists, rational expectations, different versions of all of these things. In political philosophy, the interesting debates are between followers of Strauss and Voegelin and Oakeshott and Hayek. In foreign policy, the debates are between global unilateralists and people who believe in a strong NATO, people who think that you need to have a sort of moralistic foreign policy to justify or to bolster a strong America and presence in the world, and people who prefer a kind of realpolitik, et cetera, et cetera. And this is, I think, social issues, the interesting debates, again, are among the right, broadly speaking. If you look at those debates, it's very hard to find a single line that would separate, I think, the neoconservatives from the old right. There are a lot of cross-cutting cleavages. In many instances, people who are regarded as being on the furthest right are in alliance, they have foreign policy with people who are neoconservatives against old conservatives who are, let's say, more wary of a certain kind of democratic moralism as defending a vigorous anti-communism. If you ask Mr. Gottfried referred to a golden age, if you ask, you know, who is the old, when is the old right's golden age? Well, there's a huge variety. I mean, right? I mean, which time do we hearken back to? I mean, every philosophical view does have implicit in its mind a sort of golden age, but the variety is tremendous among conservatives. The polis, some medieval order, Augustine England, Elizabethan England, the 19th century, pre-Civil War America, the founders, etc., etc. Who do we admire, Disraeli or Gladstone? I don't know, what's the old right position on that? I think, you know, Russell Kirk, I think admires Disraeli more, but many who are, you know, Friedrich Hayek and many others are Gladstonians. Jefferson or Madison or Washington or John Adams, Orestes Brownson, Lincoln, which is the figure we look to as, you know, the preeminent spokesman for American principles? And I think that's not a debate particularly between neoconservatives and the old right, but a debate between all the very interesting strands on the right. And that's good. You know, it's a free country, and people make up their minds, and people come to somewhat different conclusions on principles as well as on prudential matters. And it seems to me bootless to expect that somehow everyone's going to fall into lockstep, and indeed it would be bad if that happened. And part of the vigor of the conservative movement is that there are vigorous debates within it. The sign of the decay of liberalism is the decay of debates within liberalism, right? The staleness of the repetition of liberal formulas. As long as these debates go on within the conservative movement, I'm reasonably optimistic about the conservative movement. And it's nice when those debates go on with good cheer and in a good-natured way. I think the good cheer and the good nature is important partly because it helps attract young people and students, you know, as opposed to a kind of petulance or complaining. From a political point of view, if I can just say a word about that, since I'm in Washington and in the government now, what's most striking, of course, is that the real split in Washington is not at all, I think I can say this safely, between neoconservatives and the old right, or even between neoconservatives and the new right and the old right. The split is between those who believe in a set of principles, which I think from a political point of view is sufficiently common between the new right, neoconservatives, and the old right, or all the strains of those three persuasions. Those three persuasions have a sufficiently common set of principles that we would like, the Republican Party and the Reagan administration to act on, and the difficulty is that a lot of people either oppose those principles, the Democratic Party, basically, or there are many within the Republican Party who don't believe very strongly in those principles, who just want to keep things going along smoothly, the so-called pragmatists. Again, what's striking in Washington is the neoconservative slash new right slash old right alliance against the pragmatists. There's no great, I can think of almost no issue on which there's a serious dispute between the members or among the members of the conservative alliance. So it seems to me these kinds of debates are fine and should be carried on in with subtlety and depth in intellectual journals. From a political point of view, the task really is to invigorate the conservative movement with all of these strains, because again, you're never going to get everyone in a free society to sign on simply to one or another. But the strains seem to be to have sufficient amount in common, a belief in equal rights and constitutional limited government, the importance of the defense of freedom, the necessity to look beyond mere freedom towards the cultivation of character and virtue. I mean, that is something that is held in common and seems to me to provide a sound basis for political action. One last word. Mr. Tonser said this morning that he wouldn't storm a beach to defend Irving Kristol's views. I mean, no one's asking him to. The point isn't to defend his views or anyone else's views. The point is to defend this country and its principles. And it really seems to me, again, speaking at least as a political movement, people obviously are free to write all the articles they wish criticizing other people's views. But as a political movement, the task is not less to preserve the purity of one's sect in the movement and more to defend the country and its principles, because the defense of the country, both against enemies from without and against corrosion from within, is what's necessary to the success of any of these different visions that fall within the conservative movement. Thank you.